What's the definition of people pleasing so we can get a clear understanding of what we're speaking about?
Right, so there's a few out there. People pleasing isn't something that's diagnosable, right? You're not going to go in and get diagnosis of a people pleaser. It is a symptom of something else.
So what are some examples of just being polite versus people pleasing?
I think probably the intention behind it.
Okay.
If you...
Do you people please?
Oscar, every day that we work together,
Such a dig now.
I mean, I left myself wide open for that.
A Listener production.
This podcast is being recorded on Gadigal land. We pay our respects to the traditional custodians of this country and elders past, present. We extend our respect to any First Nations, Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander people joining us today. Hello, everyone. Oh, no, I keep starting the show singing, and I don't know why we haven't gotten more complaints about it.
No, your Missy Higgins covers.
Thank you.
Yes.
She's been listening.
I didn't want to bring it up, but Lem, get the guitar. Yeah. Oh, my God. Nightmare. Okay, everyone, we are here. We are here with the amazing Rashida Dangawala. Hey, Gorge. I almost said Rashina just then.
You said Dashina.
Dashina, because we just spoke about how your name is phonetically spelt, but people still get it wrong. And then you gave me all the examples of wrongness, and that was in my mind.
Yeah, but you got it.
Thank you, Gorge. So you are a psychologist and a psychotherapist, correct?
Yeah.
And you also are... Girl boss, you started Flow State Space in Surry Hills, which is a therapy clinic, right?
Yeah, so private practice in Surry Hills. I'm expanding this year. I'm bringing on some new practitioners, but yeah.
That's amazing. How old are you?
Thank you so much. 34.
Oh my God, that's incredible.
Thank you so much.
Oh, love you, queen. Well, we're here today to talk about people pleasing specifically, because I feel like in the group chat today, we were talking about it and we were like, oh, like, you know, what other questions should we add in? Blah, 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 blah. And I just replied, I was in a bit of a mood this morning. I just told you my whole story of why I was in a mood. I flew in from Byron and I was in a shit mood. But I replied saying, I fucking hate people pleasers. I fucking, everyone thinks they're a martyr. Fuck them. Like, not that extreme, but that's what I was thinking.
Right.
And I think that people pleasing is kind of held as a badge of like, honor from some people, but I personally see it as a major annoyance when I do it and when others do it.
Yeah, interesting. Yeah, I think probably people that are people pleasers actually identify themselves as annoying sometimes. You know, they'll come to session or they'll recognize that trait in them and they want to change, but it's so ingrained, it's something that's become so automatic that it's super hard. But it can be annoying.
Well, it's annoying for the person doing the people-pleasing, but also others around them.
Yeah.
And people kind of go, oh, I'm just a people-pleaser. And you go, you're annoying. Not as a person. Like, that part of you, it's like people act like, oh, my biggest issue. It's like people saying that in interviews, my biggest issue, I'm a perfectionist. People go, biggest issue, I just want everyone to be happy all the time. And you go, okay, martyr, okay. But what's the definition of people pleasing so we can get a clear understanding of what we're speaking about?
Right. So there's a few out there. People pleasing is when it's sort of crossed that line, right? And you are doing this pleasing behavior to attempt to maintain these attachments and these relationships, right? So it's beyond just being considerate and nice and, you know, just genuinely doing things for others and wanting to please the people in your life.
Yeah.
It's sort of crossed that line and now you're starting to, you can't stop, or you feel that if you did stop, something really bad was going to happen in your relationships, or that person was going to leave you, or, you know, you were going to be left alone or something like that might happen. So that's when it's gone into that people-pleasing territory.
Okay. So what are some examples of just being polite versus people-pleasing?
I think probably the intention behind it.
Okay.
If you are being polite and you're genuine in that and you recognize that, you know, and it's not becoming something that's hindering your life, or you feel like you're getting burnt out from it, or people around you are sort of taking advantage of you because they now know that you're just that person that's always going to do and always going to say yes, then, you know, that's the difference between just being polite and then moving it into that people-pleasing territory.
Right. So, like, if someone wanted to get picked up from the airport, which is the number one most annoying thing in the world to do for someone.
Pick you up from the airport?
Yeah.
You hate it?
Hate it. But do it with people that I love, because I go, oh, it'll make your day easier.
Yeah.
Is that people-pleasing, or is that me just being like, look, I'll drive to fucking Mascot?
No, I don't know if that's people-pleasing, because you're choosing to.
Right.
Right. You're making that choice and you recognize that it's going to impact your day or whatever it's going to do, but you're doing it anyway.
Right.
Whereas someone that, you know, is people pleasing would feel that if I didn't pick that person up from the airport, they might hate me or something's going to, you know,
right.
or they might not, you know, want to continue this friendship. I mean, that's a extreme example, but they might start getting all these other thoughts conjured up or fears getting conjured up that I have to.
So it's rooted really in anxiety.
Yeah.
And insecurity
as well. So this is the thing. So people pleasing isn't something that's diagnosable, right? You're not going to go in and get, you know, this diagnosis of a people pleaser. It is a symptom of something else.
Okay.
Often. So it would be a symptom of maybe someone that does experience anxiety, someone that even might be depressed and feel like, okay, I need to, you know, keep these people and maintain these relationships in my life. Mm-hmm. But it's not on its own a diagnosed condition.
Yeah. Right, okay. So it's not in like the DSM.
No, it's not in the DSM. You're not going to find people pleasing, but you will find it maybe as a, and it won't be either like written as people pleaser.
Right.
It might be written as something else, but it's a symptom of something else.
And where does it come from? Does it come from certain events in childhood? Does it come from, like, what's the origin story of a people pleaser?
I think there could be many origin stories for different people based on your own, you know, experiences. Mm-hmm. But I think for a lot of people, I mean, I'm obviously, you know, being a woman of colour, coming from a collectivist culture, I think that has a big factor in it. So if you've come from more of this collectivist culture, potentially, you know, it's just innate to that culture that you look after others and you're considering others and you're pleasing others. And it's, I mean, a bit tied in with self-sacrificing, right? Mm-hmm.
My aunt, sorry.
Right.
Yeah, just like spent 5 years taking care of her mum, which is all good, but just like absolutely sacrificed her entire life and was so resentful and became so toxic.
Yeah, so that's a really great example, right? As in your life is getting interfered with, your daily life is getting impacted, but you continue to do it because you're either fearing something bad's going to happen or you've got this anxiety around it. Like you can't not. And so I think, if you're coming from that sort of background, there's a potential that there's more of this tendency when you get into adulthood to not be able to sort of establish those boundaries and be able to assert your own boundaries. Maybe you've actually lost significant relationships in your life. And then from that, you've developed this fear that, you know, I have to then please and I have to keep being sort of passive in my communication in order to just keep people maintain that attachment and maintain that connection.
Right. How have you, I guess, or how can you learn to vocalize boundaries then? Because that can be a very scary thing for anyone in general, let alone someone that's from a collectivist culture or someone who's just grown up in a household that is very much self-sacrificing.
Yeah, I think it's super hard. I noticed that with people that I work with that are people pleasers, they at times mistake assertive communication with aggressive communication. They assume that if they start practicing assertive communication that they're being aggressive.
Okay. Oh, they feel like they themselves are going to be,
Yeah, because they're so used to being so passive. And, you know, sacrificing that to even move into that assertive communication, which is like assertive communication is respecting the person or the, you know, thing and yourself, you know, respecting both. Whereas aggressive is no, just, you know, disregarding everyone and disrespecting everyone. They might feel though that their communication in that practice of being more assertive is coming across way too aggressive.
Is that also I think that also would impact women and women of colour, particularly even more so because they are taken as, particularly women of colour, as taken as being aggressive or angry when they're just vocalising a boundary. I don't know if you watch Beverly Hills Real Housewives.
No.
Sorry, you have to bring it up. But genuinely, there's a scene in the latest episode where Dorit, who is a white woman, said to Garcelle, who was a black woman, she said, you are attacking me. And Garcelle had not attacked her. She just called her out for being, she was being a bit messy in one of these, well, I guess they're meant to be messy, these dinner parties. Mm. But, you know, she's being a bit messy and kind of being a little bit of a, like a bit mean to one of the other women and bringing things up that didn't need to get brought up. Mm. And Garcelle called it out because it's one of her best friends. And then Dorit said that she was attacking. And there was a whole scene the next day of them having lunch and Garcelle explaining herself as to why, like, those words for women of colour.
The black woman was explaining.
Garcelle was explaining to Dorit why those words are so hard. And it was a huge topic of conversation because Garcelle had to still remain so calm and quote-unquote understanding of Dorit in that scene, even though she actually was the one that had been, that realistically had been attacked by the word attack, ironically, which was interesting. So I can imagine for women of colour, it's a million times worse.
Yeah. And I think, again, talking about coming from communities where there is always this underlying worry, what are people going to think? What are people going to say? What are people going to, you know, you're just fearing being judged all the time, that you're almost like, you know, you're constantly thinking, how is this going to be perceived? What am I doing? And that's exhausting.
It's so draining. Exhausting. Jesus. So it's easier really to just be passive.
Yeah, well, for some people, I think it becomes just, it becomes easier because it's hard to be assertive. It's hard to actually establish a boundary.
Yeah.
And it's hard to actually verbalize that to someone and communicate that to someone too.
Yeah.
I often say, you know, empathy without boundaries is self-destructive.
Empathy without boundaries is self-destructive. Let's go into that a bit more with you because that really blew my mind a bit. Well, I just came from therapy, so I'm like, whoa.
So a lot of people pleasers will, you know, have this nature of being very empathetic and of being very caring. But when that empathy sort of doesn't have any bounds, it can become self-destructive, right? If you're just out there just giving, giving, giving constantly and you're not nourishing, like filling your cup, you will eventually get burnt out. You'll get sick physically, psychologically, emotionally, all of those things. So, you know, we were saying that it's easier sometimes to just continue with that passiveness until it's not.
Right.
So it's easier in the short term, but the long term, you're going to eventually end up getting burnt out or sick or something.
Or resentful.
Or resentful. Almost
like, I think the biggest reason why, I mean, again, I people please. When I said I hate people please, it's more like yelling at myself. I think when.
When do you people please?
Oscar, every day that we work together,
such a dig now.
I mean, I left my.
Every time that I speak to you, I'm kind to you despite wanting to scream in your face. No, when I mean, in romantic relationships, kind of exclusively in romantic relationships,
I people please.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. I don't really do it at, like, I mean, at work, I'm very clear about what I want and don't want. Just because if I'm not, then I've been scarred before and things go to shit. And I go, I have to be very clear and get like things in writing because I go, I'm a bit like controlling because I go, you people have fucked me before with things.
I don't think that's controlling. Like to have
For example, I work in an industry where there's a
lot of. You have to stroke a lot of egos.
Well, there's a lot of white people that have no understanding, like white Gen X's and boomers that are in control of things. And there's a lot of fights that I have to have about like racism stuff constantly where I have to have like two or three like singular hour long meetings and have to like fight people to convince them to not do something that is like, I'll tell you an example afterwards. And this is like every couple of months. And not saying that I'm like some martyr, but like it takes a lot of energy and effort to do that. It's like a default at work. Whereas like in romantic relationships, not with racism, but like with like if someone asks me to do something that I have feelings for, I'll just go, even if I have like a crush on someone, I'll like do whatever they want. Like if they suggest like hanging out a certain time, I'm dropping everything. If they want me to fly somewhere, I'm doing it. Yeah, do you know what I mean? Like it doesn't really suit me, but like I can try and move my whole world around for this.
Well, it's interesting, right? Because the people pleasing doesn't have to mean that you're people pleasing in every environment or every setting of your life, right? There's sometimes certain relationships or areas or environments in which, you'll notice your people pleasing tendencies. And then in other environments, you can actually be quite assertive.
Yeah. I mean, even something as less like intense as like when I have a photo shoot, I think I've spoken about this on the podcast, when I have a photo shoot and they tell me to do it from this side and I go, oh, I'm not going to approve it. So not really any point of doing that, is there? And I have to, and like on set, I'll be like, oh, love you, but you haven't shot me before and I can guarantee I'm not going to approve it. And I'll go, oh, I'll try it. And I go, but I'd rather go home. So I go, love you. I love you. And I understand that you think that I'm beautiful from all angles and you all can tell me that I'm so hot from every angle. Oh, your nose doesn't matter. And then I'll see the photos and I go, delete, delete, delete. And then they always use the one that I hate. Well, so that's
just example. Just one for safety.
Trick you. I don't let anyone trick me anymore. I go, no, sorry, not doing it. But in friendships as well, like I think I'm pretty good at like, I'm getting better at having like clear boundaries, but my therapist and I just spoke about like how romantic relationships are a very different thing for me.
Mm.
Is that the most common place to have, or is it usually like family or work, or is it just, it could be different for everyone?
Yeah, it can be different for everyone. You know, I notice it a lot in people at work.
Yeah.
Yeah, they have a tendency to please and sacrifice. I think you're right, though. It's totally different depending on the person and what they've gone through.
Mm.
Families as well, finding it really difficult. And also for some people, like the consequences or the repercussions at times in their life where they have asserted themselves haven't been great.
Yeah,
so they don't want to do it again.
Yeah.
And they have just, you know, found it more comfortable and safe even to just keep going along with whatever anyone wants of them. But the challenge there is that then you end up attracting sometimes people that take advantage of that quality in you.
Absolutely.
They see you as that person. They know that, oh, they're just going to say yes, they're going to do it. You know, we'll just use them for that then.
Yeah. My friends and I were speaking about, my friends who work like corporate jobs,
mm-hmm.
Were speaking about how we all used to work hospo together.
Mm.
So we all like are like trauma bonded from that, which is beautiful. But the girls are talking about how it's really frustrating at work because you're good at your job and because you'll do all the work someone gives to you. You almost count yourself out of a promotion because you make yourself too irreplaceable in like the peak of your band of employees, if that makes sense. So like say if you're like, only because I worked in real estate, like say if you're like a real estate agent and you're like an associate or something, if you're the best associate and you do everyone's work for them, you never get promoted because if you move from there to a director or something, the whole thing falls apart.
Mm-hmm.
And it's
interesting,
kind of like this like oxymoron of like the harder you work, the less likely you are to get promoted in some ways. And if you have no boundaries and if you're saying, yeah, I'll work 7 a.m. till 9 p.m.,
mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
then you just get dumped with all the shit.
Mm-hmm.
And then when you go for promotion, they'll just go, we shouldn't feel like it's the right time.
Right. Like, why should we pay? You're doing it anyway.
Yes. And we're paying you, you know, for, you know, not much money a year for how many hours you're doing. Really,
yep.
If we divided by the hours, you're getting $10 an hour, you know, if you're doing
bargain.
Yeah, bloody bargain. Cheaper than Macca's. And you also are like the pin holding together that entire sector of the company.
It's why companies don't hire enough staff for the roles because they've got these, you know,
guns.
People that are just doing it all.
At Len.
And getting validated
at
for
Oscar.
It.
Yeah, me going, interesting, isn't it? And also Amy, actually. But also you guys can't get promotions ever. So unfortunately,
Now, I actually am a recovering people pleaser, I would say. Like I had to take an assertiveness course.
God, no, please. Why did
hell?
You? Oh my God, Len, what the fuck?
She's not assertive enough.
I'm just imagining her in like a black belt. She's like ready to go. And we're like, everyone's like, okay, now power stance, Len. And then she's allowed to have normal body language for 10 minutes. So like, hey, yeah, you can be calm. And she's like nervous. It'd be powerful. Is that what happened?
No, what happened is I didn't have a lot of choices as a kid.
Yes.
All I had to do is just please everyone around me. So that's the environment I grew up with. And then when I came here and I got into like professional settings, I was continuously getting resentful and I didn't know how to communicate well in the work setting. So I took an assertiveness course and I was exactly what you said at the beginning. They were starting to teach us that you have to start with I statements. Mm. Don't start with you statements. You is aggressive. I is assertive, things like that. And I found it to be aggressive at the beginning. I'm like, I can't just start the sentence with I. That's fucking selfish.
Right.
And so with time, I realized that if I went to like, for example, like I think X, what do you think? Instead of you should do this or instead of like, maybe we can.
Do you think that maybe we should consider
going? So
yeah,
it really helped me. But I think I took it from the angle of like, I'm an Arab in Sydney and I cannot integrate well with the professional world of how Australians work. And I just need to upskill like that to speak the same language. Because people pleasing works in Jordan.
Does it?
In the professional setting, yeah. Like, oh, I'll do this for you. I'll do this for you. I'll do this for you. Less contracts, less agreements, less direct kind of communication.
Yeah.
And things just happen. Like, you're my buddy and it's fine. And that's what you rely on.
It's like barter cards. Yeah. Like emotional barter cards.
Pretty much.
But it sounds like everyone in that situation is...
People please.
Getting, but they, but then no one is finding it impactful negatively to their life because they're also doing it.
Yes.
Right? So everyone's actually getting an advantage of that sort of system.
I'm considered selfish with the decisions that I've taken. To move to Australia and be gay and like not be part of my family and not dote around, and I'm considered selfish. So I'm wondering whether there's actually a cultural difference between people pleasing in different settings or whether it's just the intention based and it's universal.
Yeah.
If we're coming from a collectivist culture, but then you're coming to this hyper-individualistic culture, you know, where there's going to be then singled out people that are doing this people pleasing that are not getting any sort of advantage from it. Whereas if you're in the collectivist culture and everyone's sort of operating in that way, then it's less noticeable, and also the people that you're pleasing are not taking a complete advantage of you.
Right, and there's less resentment because then you're kind of getting something from them.
It's
works.
Choice, and you know there's a choice that everyone's making versus feeling like you have to, or you're sort of losing autonomy over it.
Right. Were you operating from a place of choice or from a place of feeling like you had to?
No, initially it was you have to, definitely, as a kid. Like, I have to wear a certain thing. Mm-hmm. I have to come back at a certain time. I have to. Then I fucking had enough. And it affected me. And then now I really value choice. Like, I am so about choice. I mean, you're talking to somebody who like had food shoved down my throat like as a kid, which I fucking hated. So now I value it. I give it to my kids and I'm like really comfortable being assertive now. But I do get situations where I ruminate and like we were at a friend's house and I had to leave. And then I'm like, oh, is the friend going to hate me now? Did I do like something because I left early? Like I still have these thoughts. I don't act on them, but I still have them. You know, like if I say something to you, sometimes I can ruminate, like, did I say that? Is Abby hurt?
Well, you're on your first warning after.
Shut the fuck up, Abby. The thing is, she knows.
Tell Rashida.
We also fuck with her.
Day one.
Kind of lightly bully Lem. We know that she. Because you know why? Because Lem is literally like the best person. Like,
sugarcoat it, Abby.
So
she's like an amazing human being, but she's also like the best employee I've ever witnessed. And it's so fun. Like, Lem. So then, like, Oscar and I in the group chat. Just HR. Lem goes straight to HR after this. She goes, I've got proof of them saying their intent is to bully me. But like, she'll do one thing and she'll like overly apologize. But I'm so sorry. Oh my God. I can't believe I did that. And it's like literally like, oh, if she gets the guest a coffee, it's like soy milk instead of almond milk. Like it's something even less than that. Like it's something that's like, like the thing was, I couldn't get into the level of the radio station the other day in a different city without a pass. Right. And I just was like, oh, I can't get in without a pass.
Yeah, but it's my job as a producer to make sure that you don't wait, that you walk
in. Exactly.
That's my job. The worry
and
that you're having.
That's why you got a warning. We're aware that you should have done better.
No, we know.
Oscar and I know. Oscar, what was your warning the day that you got from me?
That's right. I asked for, I was letting you know that I was going to take one day off.
I have holiday. That's right.
Oh my God.
It was a really hard day for us as a team. But Lem is so good at her job. So it's very, all of her thoughts, you can guarantee they are, I don't want to say delusional, but I want to say they are hyper, that they are magnified.
I have to do
beyond
things.
Reasonable
it's perfectionism
understanding.
Too.
But I'm sensing that you also feel then a lot of guilt, right? It's sounding like, and then that drives you to feel like you have to do more.
It's less, it's like you didn't do your job. That's the vibe. Like perfectionism. It's like, that's your job. That's the only job you had to do, motherfucker.
Like, that's how I felt as well. And she's actually reading out texts from me to her.
She's printing them out.
She's going, you motherfucker. I had to wait. Also, I was late. Side note, I was 10 minutes late. I was 10 minutes late with the dog with me. And she's going, how dare I do this to you, Abby? I can't have done this.
Oh, no. Now, I guess, I do hold myself at very high standards.
Yeah.
So people pleasing is, I had to cut that where I just, I just have to disconnect from those thoughts that I just like. It's about, like you said, the attachment. Like, what did this person feel? And what did this other person feel? Because it's fucking draining just thinking about what everyone feels.
It is.
Yeah.
So how do you disconnect? How do you, so for
I know you're all going to
like
make fun of me. I meditate a lot. I know this is like the guru answer.
No, that's okay.
But I meditate. I like try to just, yeah, like do all these. There's an app called Ahead as well that I've been using, like that's Duolingo and like psychotherapy as well, where like you detect signs before they happen, where you like bite your tongue if you do this thing. It's weird, I'm telling you.
Oh,
anyway, this is not about me, guys.
That.
Wow. Well, how, okay, so Lem's obviously not very good at her job, so it's different. So it's different because like she actually isn't doing very well. But like when the reason why I've said early in the episode that I don't like people pleasers or people's behaviors is because I feel like we always miss out the conversation around how much it affects other people around you when you aren't able to vocalize your boundaries for yourself, because you have people tend to have internal resentment or expectations that they aren't vocalizing. And then one day they either like blow up or they like distance themselves from you because they're like, well, you aren't like, this person's upsetting me because of this, this, this. And it's like, well, you didn't have the conversation or express why, for example, I don't know, like getting me from work every afternoon was annoying you.
Exactly like, right. So I talk about, you know, that assertive communication and those boundaries as things in place to avoid that irreparable rupture where the person that's just been biting their tongue, not saying anything, will eventually have that moment where they just blow up. And then that causes this at times like irreparable rupture to the relationship, right? If you can gradually start to expose yourself to saying things that are really difficult and having those difficult conversations and asserting yourself and saying what your boundaries are, it actually allows the relationship to be maintained. Which is your biggest fear in saying something, that this is going to ruin the relationship, but it allows the relationship to continue. And boundaries are meant to be adjusted, right? It's not that you have that conversation and you talk about what the boundaries might look like and then that's it, you know, then you come back to it again and again and again if things need to be adjusted or changed or they look different or they feel different.
I think as well, when you vocalize boundaries, you're able to understand what's upsetting you, because my best friend Kath and I are like everyday hangout best friends, or at least a phone call or something when I'm in Sydney. Tragic, we're apart at the moment and it's really hard for us. But we had not even a fight, like we never had fights, but there was a time like at the end of last year where I was really, really stressed and I just came out of hospital and all of our communication was about like one particular topic that was like important for us to speak about something, but I was like, I couldn't figure out why it was upsetting me so much. And I was like talking to my therapist about it and I ended up crying, being like, I just feel really neglected and I feel like I really miss my best friend. Like I feel like all they want to talk about is this thing they're going through, which is, I could hear about it till the fucking cows come home, but like it's 100% of the pie, you know what I mean? The communication. And now I feel like me 4 years ago would just leave it and then just probably like either swallow it and get over it, deal with it in therapy or talk to other people about it. But I was like, Kath and I are very communicative as friends, which is really beautiful. It's a very important friendship to me because I messaged them and I was like, I feel a bit distanced from you, even though we are speaking all the time still. And I just want to make you aware that I'm feeling this way. And they obviously replied being like, oh my God, you're so right. Like, absolutely. I'm sorry you felt that way. I'll work on it. And then like, and it wasn't a big thing at all, but it was like the start of resentment beginning to grow. And then from then, I mean, who thought we could get closer, but we have gotten closer.
After that conversation.
Yes, because we're both like, okay, because we've always said, oh, we always have open communication, but we've never had an issue, really.
So and this was the first time to put it in action
to see what happened. And it really, it was great. And amazing. I've been kind of G-ing it up over like 3 or 4 days, you know, in therapy going,
what's going to happen? What am I?
Yeah.
How are they going to respond, et cetera?
Totally.
You were honest. You were authentic. The person that you were talking to actually likely appreciates that.
Yeah. But then I'm lucky in that sense because my test of, in terms of, I guess, the bigger picture of testing, asserting boundaries in friendships in this instance was received well because of who Kath is and because of our friendship. I think that if it was to somebody else, it would be different.
Well, it's why it's so linked with anxiety, because it's unknown.
Yeah.
Right? And we predict, and when we've got anxiety, which is, you know, people pleasing a symptom of that, you know, we're predicting the worst case scenarios to happen. And so when we start considering raising something that's going to be difficult, we start, assuming that it's going to be the worst case scenario. They're not going to be able, they're not going to receive that well. They're not going to want to be my friend. They're not going to want to be my partner anymore, whatever it might be. And I think the challenge, though, with boundaries and starting to assert yourself or starting to speak up for yourself is that along the way, and this is what I noticed with people that are sort of recovering people pleasers, is that your relationships likely will change because, you know, we were talking about before, if you're a people pleaser and that's how you've been for years, you've likely attracted people into your life that are taking sort of advantage of that or who have recognized that in you and are around because they know that you're doing all of that. When you start asserting yourself or having your own boundaries, those people are not going to like it.
Yeah.
And so some of them will potentially drop off or the relationship's going to change. It's going to look different. And there has to be some preparation for that too.
Yeah.
That's not always a bad thing though.
Yeah, because I guess like what I've learned in having like I have a few friends that are therapists, one really close friend who's a therapist who set boundaries with me about something. And it actually makes a relationship much deeper when you're able to set boundaries with each other and you can like understand each other, have open communication. But you can, lose friends or lose people that maybe are maybe you don't realize a more surface level, but could be more surface level and could be more of a transactional relationship in their eyes, which could be very hurtful.
That's it. So the people that really receive it well, you know, respect what you're saying, recognize how hard that might have been and value what it is you have to say, those are the ones that you want to be in your life.
Yeah.
And those relationships will deepen. And then the ones that, you know, don't like it, don't get it, don't want a bar of it are the ones that are going to, you know, potentially leave, but that might not have been that relationship that you needed in your life or that was good for you.
I want to talk about people pleasing in abusive relationships or relationships with narcissists and whether that's people pleasing or that's like a survival tactic.
Yeah, fawning. So we have, you know, fight, flight, freeze. A lot of people are pretty aware of those responses. And we also have fawn, which is where we sort of make ourselves very small and we make our world small, what we say small, our body small in order to actually survive through that thing. So fawning, I guess, is an experience of people pleasing, but quite a advanced experience of people pleasing, right? Where you sort of, you feel like you need to in order to survive.
Yeah. And I guess you do. So then, I guess you can't really change because it's like you're like if you do try to do the whole boundary setting thing in an abusive relationship, it's probably not going to work very well, is it?
No, so it can be really complex with, you know, understanding where that boundary is. And I think hopefully if you've got good support around you, you know, you would have that support and your safety comes first really.
Yeah.
Like I'm just wondering if you're hearing this, like do people pleasers realise that they are pleasing people, you know, is it, or is it just, it just feels very normal to them and it's not until hindsight that they realize, like, is there something that, you know, people can really take on board? Like I noticed earlier you said, oh, you know, you might feel tired or run down or get sick, you know, I feel like it's easier in hindsight to look, but it's sometimes in the moment, it might not be so easy.
Exactly right. So if it's become so automatic and normalized and you've been doing this for years, you know, like any sort of trait or anything that you're doing, it can be hard to recognize. But often people pleasers start recognizing that they've been people pleasing when they are burnt out by it, or they're falling sick all the time, or they're, you know, noticing that, you know, the relationships they're in aren't reciprocal and they're always doing a lot and the people in their lives are not doing things in return for them. Then they start to clock that, oh, something's maybe a bit off and, you know, maybe come to therapy or start, you know, doing their own self-work and realizing that, yeah, maybe I don't have any boundaries or maybe I've not even observed in the people around me what it is to have boundaries. You know, talking about a lot of people coming from backgrounds in which everyone is pleasing, is sacrificing, doesn't have boundaries. How do you then learn to know what that looks like to put in place?
And then you start doing boundaries with those people and then they tell you, you're guilted for it. You know?
Yeah, you're guilted for it. Exactly.
Yeah, totally. That's totally. I'm actually wondering if it can go the other way where people think that they're people pleasers and then they like go right up against it into like selfish territory and where they're like, all about what I want and mm-hmm. this like hyper individualistic boundary mm-hmm. kind of vibe. Are you noticing like that is a trend that's happening or
yes,
is it just me?
100%. No, I am noticing it. And I mean, you know, in my sessions, I encourage conversation before people just decide to ice someone out or end a relationship. Mm-hmm. You know, if you're already on a path of considering ending a relationship, mm-hmm. you know, a conversation or communication, you know, it's deserving of that because you don't know what that can mean. That might mean that the relationship actually continues. It just looks different. Mm-hmm. But that hyper-individualism of just, you know, cut everyone out if they're not serving you, or I don't think that it's helpful. We're relational beings. Mm-hmm. You know, we are meant to be connected with each other. We're meant to have these conversations and communicate and work on what these things look like, mm-hmm. what these relationships look like. So I think it's really important.
How do we set a healthy boundary then rather than being, you know, throwing the word boundary around? My friend Rowdy and I were talking about this over New Year's and we were like, sorry, us driving to Bunnings, going, yelling in the car, going, sorry, saying that you don't want to come to dinner tonight is on a boundary. Like people that go, oh, like he was,
people
like,
weaponizing boundaries.
Yeah, like, and they go, we were like laughing, people being like, oh, sorry, like my boundaries, I don't eat shellfish. She's like, that's an allergy. It's not a boundary. Like my boundaries, I don't go to comedy clubs on Thursdays. Like, you just don't like that. Like, yeah. What a boundary. Like a boundary should, like, encapsulate. Like, a boundary could be, like, I don't put myself in situations where I'm going to feel uncomfortable mm-hmm. for a certain amount of time. That's fine. But, like, saying, like, sorry, not going to eat broccoli. Not a boundary. As a preference.
A bit specific.
Yeah. Right? So how do we, what even is a boundary? Yeah, what can a boundary be?
Thank fuck, yes.
Because Rowdy and I were like, for fuck sake, being like, oh, sorry, my boundary. Like, also, like, people that have boundaries and they go, and they're so like, they won't change it because they think because it's the word boundary, that then it's like, well, you actually don't have boundaries. It's like, okay. Yeah.
Well, I think boundaries used in ways in which you're just negating any responsibility, mm-hmm. you're passing blame onto someone else is not a true boundary, right?
Yes.
That's actually just putting up walls and avoiding anything that you need to do or anything that you actually need to hold yourself accountable for.
Yeah.
And that's very different to a boundary in which you've recognized over time that this is taking a toll on me emotionally, mm-hmm. physically, whatever it might be, and mm-hmm. I need to therefore
the
establish.
Physically. Sorry.
But seriously, they can misinterpret that as like, it's my boundary, you're crossing
yeah,
it,
you're crossing
and it's
it.
Like, I'm not feel like exactly what you said, but it's like, why are you wearing red? You know,
yeah.
like
yeah.
something to, yeah.
It is the challenge. I think it's the advantage and the disadvantage to therapy speak and different
yeah.
terms, just being able to be used, you know, however people want to use them. But I think for if people are wondering for themselves, you know, have I just been putting all these unnecessary boundaries in place? Mm. You know, are you maybe just avoiding things? Like, is this turning into an avoidance?
I've got a question. Sorry.
Okay,
sorry, I had to cross my boundary.
I've had enough. My boundaries have been crossed. Shush, please. We know we've got you here to talk to you, but I've had enough. Wow, we're getting really good at assertive fast in action.
Sorry, I think I'm on half a second delay. So for me, I heard that as a really clean break and I was like, this is your moment, Oscar, jump in. But now I'm embarrassed. No, sorry, you keep going.
No, I was finished. Don't be okay.
So I've got like, this is what I'm wondering. Is this a boundary? Okay. Mm-hmm. So in the example, right, Abby, you've asked me, do you want to go out for dinner tonight or whatever sometime this week? And I've gone, oh no, because I don't want to. The reason why I don't want to is because I just get really tired during the week. And so I want to honor myself and not overstep my boundary of doing too much. Can I say in that example, I probably can't this week. You know, I'm just, you know, just wanted to hit my boundary of not going out. Is that acceptable or am I a wanker?
I think it's acceptable based on how many times you've done that, right? If Abby's asking you every week and every week you keep saying, you know, nah, I can't, not my week, et cetera, et cetera. Mm. Then you're not, you know, you're not in this reciprocal relationship where sometimes you have to make some sacrifices in order to remain in a, you know,
yes.
relationship with someone. And so it's so nuanced, isn't it? It's not just so black and white in that this is what it looks like and this is what it's not. But I think, you know, you have to consider, yeah, am I repeatedly doing this? Is there a reason why I keep putting in place this boundary because I'm actually avoiding another conversation around something or, you know, something else I'm feeling or want to talk about that I can't, so I just avoid it altogether.
Mm. Is it also like if the boundary applies to, like, say in that example, it's like Oscar saying, I want to have Thursday night at home. That's like a boundary. Mm. And even if Lem asked, then it's like, I'm protecting myself. It applies to everything and everyone. Otherwise, yes. You could just not like me.
Yeah.
I would say no to Lem as well. It's not you, I promise.
Fuck you.
Yeah, thank you. but you know what I mean? Is that kind of a way to, one of the ways to check in? If it's like, oh, my boundaries that I don't want to dinner with Abby tonight, but I'll go bowling with Lem. You guys bowling? It's nice you guys bowling together.
But you can have specific boundaries,
okay,
right,
around
certain people and around certain – I mean, that a family is a big one that comes to mind.
Yes.
You know, people might have boundaries around certain family members but not their entire family because it's that particular family member that really, you know, activates something in them.
But if someone else in the family did the same thing, they wouldn't need a boundary.
Well, if that –
sense. Or would it be – because what I'm saying is, like, say if, like, I have a boundary that, like – I don't want Oscar to scream at me all the time. No, I don't know. Lem has a boundary that, oh no, this is just a fucking dinner one. Okay, so there's a boundary where it's like, I don't want someone to call me 3 times a day. Like say if like in theory, like one of your friends calls you all the time and requires a lot of emotional support from you. Mm-hmm. Is it a boundary because I would not want that from anyone?
Mm.
Or is it like, I don't want that particular person. So next time I'm asking, is someone else trying?
Yeah, but it has to be, yeah. I mean, only you know that, why it might be directed to that one particular person.
I feel like what Rashida's saying from everything, all the conversation, is about balancing your wants with the wants of the person in front of you and trying within the context of a relationship to see their want right now. Is it, do I like get rid of my want sometimes for this specific person's want in this specific situation? Because it's reciprocity, because sometimes you just got to let go a little bit of your wants. Mm-hmm. But if you overdo letting go of your wants is when you're people pleasing.
And Lem, you just take my
Lem.
Job. I'm retiring. I mean, Lem's taking over.
Lem, we are going bowling Thursday night.
That is so interesting. Course, let's write it down.
Oh my God. Lem, go
no, that's
lecture
exactly
at the uni.
Right. That's exactly.
Jesus Christ.
I'm saying
so
that because I'm so familiar with it. What ends up happening or what ended up happening with me in my early 20s is that I completely forgot about what I want.
Yes.
And then I just didn't know what I want anymore. And it was just like I morphed into the universe. I didn't have I didn't have, me as an essence. And then slowly started realizing like, oh, this is what I like. And then now, I do. I sometimes tend to go to the other situation, the other extreme where I'm inflexible with like, but it's what I want. Mm. And then now I'm like learning to balance between both.
Finding that middle ground. I do a lot of work with people around figuring out what is important to you. What are your values? How do you want to live your life? What do you want to stand for? Because often people that are people pleasers or have come from those backgrounds have adopted everyone else's values and, you know, how everyone else is living and just internalized it as that must be important to me without ever getting a chance to really sit and figure it out for themselves that, you know, is this really what I want? Is this how I want to be living? Is this a relationship I want to remain in? And so, having that space to actually figure that out. And then once you figure that out and you start living in accordance with that, you can introduce some of that assertiveness and those, you know, boundaries around it.
How do you figure that out? How do people figure that out, what they actually value?
I think just, you know, figuring out what fulfills you when you do certain things, when you spend time with certain people, when you're engaging in certain things, you know, do you come away from it feeling nourished? Do you come away from it, you know, with a feeling of like, can't wait to do it again? Or do you come away feeling really drained? Do you come away feeling like, you know, I hate that and I keep doing it. Why?
Yeah, like actually being aware of your feelings rather than just being like, this is how things are done. This is what we're doing anyway. Like we have to go to Christmas because, you know, this is what we have to do every year. Yeah.
Jules asked a question, by the way, if you want. We can.
Oh, she did. My assistant, Jules, who we love, who couldn't be here today. My boundary is she doesn't come near me. I'm kidding. Love her so much. Love her so much. What did she ask in the group chat?
I'd be curious to know her thoughts around the discourse that people pleasers are actually selfish/manipulators. Manipulative. Mm. Manipulative.
I actually wrote a note about this.
Oh, great. Get the notes up. Yeah, let me get it out.
I wrote so many notes around what I, well, yeah, I mean, something I was writing was around honesty in that, right? In that sometimes, you know, I think the intention originally would have started with wanting to keep people close and wanting, but that can be dishonest, right? You're doing it more because you're fearing for something for yourself rather than considering, you know, that other person as well that you're in the relationship with or that thing. Mm-hmm. So I think there can be some people out there that are being a little bit manipulative, but I don't really like using that word.
Okay, why?
Because often with any sort of symptom or any sort of mental health challenge, there has been an origin. There's been a function to it at some point in your life that has served you well. It's no longer serving you, but you're repeating that pattern. Mm-hmm. So if we can figure out the time in which it did serve you and, you know, realize that you don't need that anymore, then we can start switching it off. Mm-hmm. But to just sort of label someone as like, oh, you're being manipulative, it doesn't give them a chance either then to really understand where is that behavior coming from. Mm-hmm. And then try and do something, try and behave differently.
Yeah, right. Okay, of course. Could the cure to people pleasing be that actually you're kind of annoying other people by people pleasing, therefore you stop people pleasing if you really care about what they think? Is this a full circle? Is it like I'm actually doing the opposite while the people pleasing is still there, but it kind of cancels each other out.
I'm curious to know what annoys you about people pleasers. You've said, you know, that they're annoying or they can be annoying. What is annoying about it?
I think it's just like the lack of genuine communication about how they're feeling about things. And you just feel like, I also feel like people that are doing things, even like a small example of like the person at Christmas, I'm sure every family has, or at family events, like the person who's done all of the has done all of the cooking and then does all the cleaning, doesn't actually talk to anyone. It's like, and they're doing it like some sort of kind of martyr. And you're like, you're actually not engaged with anyone and you're actually being kind of rude. But you're kind of doing it in a way that's like, oh, it's almost like a victim thing or like a bit internally. Like I haven't said anything, but I go, I know that you think, oh,
so
Christmas is so awful because I have to cook and I have to clean. And no one once has asked you to do that. No one once has mentioned it. In fact, everyone goes, where are they over lunch? And goes, why are they in the kitchen? And everyone goes, do you want to come and sit outside? And they go, no, I have to clean. Mm. My family's very low on this, but like we have, I imagine it, I get told about that my family is very, fucking come at, you know what I mean? But like other people's families, I can imagine, and it's something I think about
there's
a lot.
Always that one person. That
as the example, yeah, of like a people pleaser, and it's often a boomer woman who's been raised to do that.
It's so linked with their identity.
Yes. Like it's like when you're in high school and you're at like a party and there's like the one person who like wants to clean up for all the boys because they want to impress them and seem like a good, quote unquote, good wife. I went to private schools. This is a very, and it's like, oh, you were acting like you're doing this as like a martyr, but you're actually doing it to be seen in a certain way. Mm-hmm. And that is making everybody else uncomfortable. And you've made everyone else feel like they're a bad person for not helping with Christmas or for not doing this when you actually haven't vocalized that you want that.
Yeah.
In fact, you vocalize you don't want help.
Well, it's also linking with people feeling like they can control the perception others have of them, right? And because it's so linked with their identity and they're now viewing themselves as this person that just does, and they likely get validated for it at some point.
Yeah.
You know, all this stuff that they're doing for everyone. And so it continues on that cycle, right? If you're getting validated for it and you're getting accolades for it and it's become just second nature, it's lacking the self-awareness that other people that recognize, okay, maybe I'm in that people-pleasing territory and I don't want to do this anymore. There's a difference in those two types of people.
Mm. And when you're stuck in it, say if you are like a boomer woman and you're like 65 years old, I've been doing it since you were 20, you know, you got married and didn't work.
I guess. Are likely feeling so resentful inside.
So resentful. And I think as
that
well.
She puts down the plate like this.
Yeah.
In front of you.
Yeah.
And or contempt, like, right? It starts to develop, move into from resentment, bitterness, and then just contempt. Where you just lost that respect for people around you, or you assume that, you know, I'm the only one that can do it.
Yeah. Or if all like it's, and it also is like your mood brings down, it's like, oh, you know, just a Christmas example, I think everyone can relate to a
so relate,
someone,
by the way. I just met someone like that. So that's so weird that you're giving that example.
Everyone has it. All my friends have this to whatever degree in their family. No matter what kind of cultural background they come from, I think everyone has this person, which is very interesting. And honestly, in a way, they are the backbone of Christmas, right? Like, you're like, yeah, look, you are doing it all. But if you just said to everyone, hey, can everyone bring a dish? You wouldn't have to do fucking anything. You just put the honey on the ham and put it in the fucking, in the oven, and then you just get paper plates. Like, grow up. No, biodegradable. But like, I think another thing is, well, it's like, oh, excited for Christmas. If you try to talk to them about anything, right, that it's like, oh, well, not for me because I have to, oh, okay. And then you don't know what to like, you're like, okay, well, I think you're, I don't, like, you're actually punishing me instead of making me pleased. You're actually punishing me for what you've done, which literally no one, like this year we had Christmas lunch at a restaurant.
Yeah.
Joyous.
Yeah.
Joyous. Brilliant. The chef did yell out, oh, fucking everything. But other than that, it was like, you know what I mean? I think, side note, hot tip for anyone that has fights every Christmas, because this, genuinely go to a Christmas fucking lunch. Yeah. I swear to God, it was so much more fun this year. And we all got to go home after only 2 hours. It was wonderful. But I think, the other reason why it annoys me is because it also can impact, say, if you're like dating people pleaser, or you're like best friend, like really close to one, right?
Mm-hmm.
And there's no one person can please everyone at one time.
Mm-hmm.
And I've dated someone who his people pleasing only was focused on his family, and they weren't nice people. It wasn't like it was like you obviously are like, I love my parents, obsessed, da 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 da. So it's like, you get it. You know what I mean? You know, yeah, you get it.
You're deserving.
Yeah. I go, they deserve that. They deserve a little bit of pleasing. You know what I mean? But it was like, it was out of a place of fear and a place of like being threatened to be cut out of the family, yeah, and like things like that. And it would really affect our relationship because say if like he was at my house and his parents asked him to literally go and build a fence on a farm over 5 day periods, he would leave me and go and do it. And I'd be like, and I said, you know, they should just like pay for someone to do that, or like, are you getting paid, or like it isn't just like helping someone hang a picture. It takes up time off work. It's just like intense labor. And it's like, you're actually, by pleasing them, you are completely ignoring every other part of your life.
Yep. If you're saying yes to something, you're saying no to something else. Yep. So if you're saying yes to, it's true, so true, right? If you're saying yes to his family and all the things that they're asking him to do whilst you were in the relationship with him, he's saying no to some time with you, or, you know, something that you need from him. And so it becomes this really difficult battle. But you were talking about like the cure.
Yeah.
For people pleasing. I think a big part, which is why it's so challenging, is through a lot of exposure and having to actually sit with all of that discomfort that likely gets brought up for someone that has just been doing and people pleasing, that they have to sit with the discomfort of what comes up when they're not just going automatically to that behavior.
Well, to be fair, when he did push back and didn't people please, he told me that he would get uninvited from Christmas. And I said, no, you won't. And then he did. And I was like,
oh, shit.
Right. Shouldn't have pushed you on that one. You genuinely, they followed through, but ended up going. But like, I was like, oh, this is like a real.
Yeah, but that's also, that's not on you. That's the family.
Yeah.
You know, taking it to that level where.
Conditional.
It's conditional. It's conditional love. And that's another reason why a lot of people end up as people pleasers, is because they actually have been in family dynamics in which there's been a lot of conditional love, where especially between the parent and child, you know, that's where we want unconditional love. Mm. Their love has been so conditional. I'll show you love if you do this, if you do that.
Mm.
And therefore, you know, to feel like they can receive love from their guardian parent, whoever it was, that was that significant person, they continue to just do,
yeah, and sacrifice. Right. I think it's also like the other thing that annoys me about them, and also myself, side note, is, or not annoys me, this is just like kind of counterintuitive in a way, is people who, like Oscar, if you didn't want to go to dinner as my friend personally, and you said, I wouldn't need you to say my bow. I'd go, if you literally replied like CBF lol, I'd go, fair.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean?
Oh, yeah.
So it's like, because I would want you to be okay with me saying CBF lol, right?
It's the real clinical speak that
It's the term that you've got. I mean, I would never say that term, but I actually genuinely, like, and it wouldn't be just with you. It would be with everybody. It wouldn't, you know, like, I just can't be bothered. But I would just say that. I would just say that.
Yeah, he tells me that all the time.
But if you were a people pleaser, right, and you were like, I can't, and you made up a lie as to why you can't do it. Often they end up lying. Mm-hmm. They're like, I can't do it because I've got a work thing tomorrow. It's like, just say, I can't be fucked to go to see Saltburn tonight. Like, I cannot be fucked. Sorry, Jacob Lordy's hot. We all know. It's confirmed. So it's like, I think it also almost makes the other person in the relate dynamic feel like they have to have a real excuse or a real reason to not. Does that make sense? It's kind of like you are projecting your people pleasing where it's like, oh, I can't do that because I this. And you go, well, they never say to me, I can't be fucked. Another reason why I love Kath, because we just go, babe, CBF, might see you tomorrow.
Yeah, you're honest.
Yeah, or like, I don't like that beach that you want to go to. So I'm going to go to this beach. If you want to come to me, you can. But also, I don't give a fuck if you do or not. Like, where I think that that's...
It's just freeing, isn't it? To be able to know that you're going to be able to say what it is you want to say, and then that person's not going to, you know, receive it and then interpret it and then, you know, have something to say about it.
It makes it overthink.
But yes. But you and Kath have established that relationship over time to get to a point where you can feel so comfortable in saying that to each other, right?
There's
a certain level of trust that's required for that interaction to happen. And then that's why all the fucked attachment from parenting, and then that's how it plays out in real life, because you're like, are they going to be come back to me if I put a boundary? Like, are they going to, you know? And it's just like, parent your kids better, do better than your parents. Because, anyway.
So true, Lem. Do you have a therapy session soon? Or should we see if Rashida will do stay for an extra hour or so?
My books are open.
Oh my God. Well, I'm very pleased with this episode. That was like a fucking...
Has it come to the end?
It's been like an hour.
It's
been 1 hour, exactly.
An hour.
Is there any other topic? Best hour of our life.
Oh no, best of our lives. We love it so much. Is there anything other element you want to talk about though in this that you find?
Let me look at my
notes. Yeah, because I'd love if you have, because I'm sure you think of things also, and hear things that we wouldn't even comprehend.
Abby, did you get any DMs from your story? Any quick fire questions?
Yeah, I did. Let me see. Someone said to me, I almost willingly dived into a pool in grade 3 with the rest of the class because I didn't want to be a fuss that I couldn't swim. I was willing to drown.
That's it, right? I mean, it can actually get dangerous, people pleasing.
Well, actually, an example is when I hurt my shoulder on The Bachelor. And I'm still in physio for it 5 years later, but I didn't tell anyone because I didn't want to be annoying on set. It was just during one of these, we did like, you know how Pink does like in the air?
Like yoga aerobics or...
Yeah, but when they dangle from the air, like ribbons or whatever they're called.
Yeah.
That, you can watch that on YouTube. I did that with Matt and we actually did the take like 9 times and obviously we weren't trained. So like he was pulling my shoulder and it really hurt afterwards and I couldn't do push-ups for like 4 years.
Oh no.
But I didn't want to be annoying on set, so I didn't tell anyone. So no one blamed Warner Brothers because no one knew or could have known that I was in I was crying the next day. And I didn't want to tell them. So I was like, oh, it'd be so annoying if I tell them that my shoulders really hurt from this. So it actually is physically dangerous.
Yeah, it can be.
So now if I'm like a little bit thirsty on set, I say, I'm thirsty. Don't do that. I don't do that at all. I'll like text my runner and say, give me a fucking Coke. But yeah, it can be dangerous. It's like peer pressure elements, you know?
Definitely.
Oh, someone said, is there a correlation between having ADHD and being a people pleaser because of rejection sensitivity dysphoria?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think that the rejection sensitivity dysphoria just lends to wanting to please and sometimes not being able to be mindful of what your own needs might be at that time because the fear of rejection just overrides any of your own needs at that time.
And I think as well, having ADHD, you take on more than you possibly could do because your brain thinks you could do it. Mm-hmm. Like I always end up, and it isn't even like a people-pleasing thing of like I'm scared they're going to hate me, but it's like getting someone from the airport. If I have like a million things, if I have like a shoot in the morning, podcast in the afternoon, I have to have dogs for a walk, and I'm like, well, I can squeeze it in this hour, so I'll just do it.
Yeah, people with ADHD often swinging between burnout and boredom. You know, and finding, just trying to find that middle ground.
Yeah.
It's difficult.
Oscar, what are you right now? Burnt out or bored?
You know what? I'm doing okay, but I'm getting to burn out.
Yeah. That's fun.
Because I found that I was bored.
Because you can be the victim then. Get your poor man for time. Because
then I think
me.
About all these ideas, and then all of a sudden I'm like, I'm so fucking burnt out. I need a day off. I'm sure if I ask Abby, it'll be okay.
Yeah, well, unfortunately it wasn't. So unfortunately I ruined your exposure therapy. Failed. And as it should, because you aren't allowed to have a holiday. So my therapist went on a
never free... asking that again.
No, literally, he can never go on break ever. It's like my therapist, like, she went on a holiday over Christmas. I didn't even know if she went on a holiday. She said time off. And I was like, you're a selfish bitch. Fuck you. Someone asked, how connected is people pleasing with control?
I think actually a lot of mental health conditions, because we talked about how people pleasing is maybe a symptom of something like anxiety. We'll use anxiety as a example. Anxiety is the act of wanting to control things that are outside of your zone of control. Mm. Like what's actually within our zone of control is pretty small, pretty limited. But anxiety is that act of wanting to control all of these other variables outside of that zone, and which we can't. Mm-hmm. People pleasing gives you that idea that you are controlling it though, right? Mm. Like if I continue to be so nice, if I continue to be so giving and doing, like they will stay in my life and they and this relationship or this work or whatever it might be, it is going to continue. Yeah. And so you think that you actually are controlling it, and you are. I mean, a lot of these things work short term. They give you that instant gratification. They give you that short term, you know, feeling of I'm in control. And then, you know, but the sustainability of it is not there.
Right.
You know, because over time you will, again, you know, you will get tired of that or you'll get burnt out from it or it'll cause some sort of damage.
Yeah, that's so true. It's like you can only control so much. You can only, and I think that, again, I think with anxiety and ADHD as well, I don't know, I'm just like, I feel like I'm out of control so much with ADHD. Mm-hmm. So maybe like that's an element of like, well, at least I can guarantee this. If I do this, that's why I offer things more than I can actually actually give.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, what are like the steps to stopping?
Well, I do a lot of work where you have to sort of learn to tune back into your body.
Like somatic.
Somatic stuff. Work, right? And interoception is this concept where we have this bi-directional message going on. So when there's changes within our body and within our systems, it's also sending a message back to our brain to say, you know, whatever, like look out or watch out or whatever. Mm-hmm. And so people, I think, that are pleasing, that are doing things so automatically, that have become so second nature that there's not much thought behind, they're not listening to the signals of what's going on within their body. Mm-hmm. So if we can start to figure that out again and learn and connect back in with what is our body feeling, then we might actually get a clue that this doesn't feel so good in my body. Therefore, you know, maybe I am crossing my own boundary, crossing that line.
Right.
And I'm not considering my own needs.
Okay. How can things not feel good in your body? Like anxiety?
Physiologically, like, you know, your gut might feel off. Mm-hmm. You know, you might notice that you're holding yourself really tight. Your muscles are sore. You know, those are those physiological symptoms that you can start to clue into to start recognizing that, yeah, maybe I'm, you know, not living a life aligned with what's actually really important to me.
Yeah. For me, when I'm like feeling something weird, like somatically, my foot is always flexed. Like I'll I'll be lying down, like watching Real Housewives, and I'll obviously be anxious about something. My whole body will be tense. But my foot will be flexed enough to go, oh, and then I'll be like, wow, my whole body's relaxed with that.
That's good though, because you know a lot of people that have ADHD really struggle with interoception, with being able to pick up on what their bodily cues are telling them.
I did a somatic course online.
Oh,
well,
there you go.
Oh,
yeah,
really?
And yeah, I did. Okay. I did do that, Oscar.
Like, what did you learn? What did you learn from it?
Just like when, just
I
like
don't think
how
you
to
did.
Recognize.
It doesn't
that,
sound
okay,
like you did.
Me going, it was very like it was just like how to like learn like when I'm anxious, like where the anxiety is, and then interrogate that anxiety and why it's in my throat or in my chest or in my like neck or you know shoulders or whatever, and then trying to actively let go of that, and then see it move around the body and with breathing and let it release and. You know, okay, there we go.
That's
there
it,
we go.
No, okay, yes, you have.
Thank you. Confirmed. Yes. Pass.
It's bottom-up therapy, right? So a lot of this cognitive and talk therapy and like exposure and doing things, I mean, that's top-down and then you'll be changing your behavior, but the bottom-up is like tuning back into the body. Yeah. And then hand-in-hand, perfect.
Yeah, because I feel like I intellectualize a lot of my issues because ADHD girly, but also because like I have friends that like all we do, my friends and I are very like we have like DNMs every time. You know, we all have like share examples and thoughts about things, and we all know, oh, I'm doing this because of this, in my childhood, and I think this. And it's like, cool, what help is that if you're still holding the anxiety or the stress in your body somewhere, not letting it go? You can know why, but you're still holding on to it.
Yeah, yeah.
Wow, me being, okay, Oscar, happy with that?
You've passed. That was awesome.
Thank you so much. Okay, Rashida. First of all, do you have any openings for any clients? I'm like, people DM me all the time being like, do you know a good therapist? And I go, yeah, but she's mine. So I'm not replying to which therapist I go to. But how can people find you on socials?
Yeah.
Do you have any openings?
What's going on? My books are actually open right now. They can find me on Instagram at flow.state.space. Website's getting updated right now. I just brought on a new practitioner. So if my books get full, you know, you can see her, Caitlin, she's amazing. That's where they can find me.
Amazing. They'll be all linked in the show notes. Yep. Thank you so much.
Thank you so much.
Joyous. A Listener Production.